The pandemic is transforming all of our lives, from how we gather to how we work. The U.S. Supreme Court is no different. The justices dialed in to hear their final oral argument of the term today, which was about sentencing reductions for low-level crack cocaine offenses. Their final call also falls on the one-year anniversary of the court's very first remote oral argument. John Yang reports on the big adjustment.
Oh, yay. Oh, yay. Oh, yay.
Few institutions are as tradition-laden as the Supreme Court, but the pandemic has created a lot of changes.
God save the United States and this honorable court.
For a year, the high-ceiling marble courtroom has been empty. All oral arguments conducted by telephone conference call.
It's hard to know when to stop speaking, when to stop answering a question.
Former Acting Solicitor General Neil Katyal says the three cases he's argued over the phone have been a little different from the previous 41 in person.
Well, I think one of the skills, you know, that you learn over time is you really learn body language down to, you know, where their finger is put on their cheek or something like that. Now, of course, we have no vision at all. It is just oral and audio. In real life, or even on Skype, I can at least look at you and see, are you zoning out? Do you look satisfied with my answer? On the phone, it's impossible. We don't get that just very simple level of feedback.
Justice Thomas?
Justice Thomas?
And with Chief Justice John Roberts playing timekeeper.
So you really can't.
Justice Alito?
Oral arguments are more formal question and answer than free-flowing discussion.
With the time now, each justice getting a set amount of time discrete from the others, does that make a difference?
It makes a huge difference. I mean, one of the unique things about the Supreme Court is that the justices may not have even talked to each other about the case at all before the oral argument. So sometimes the questions, both pre-coronavirus and during coronavirus, are as much statements to one of their colleagues as they are questions to the advocate.
Over the centuries, oral arguments have changed drastically.
In the first decades, the justices heard cases cold, which meant that they hadn't read any briefs.
Historian Claire Cushman of the Supreme Court Historical Society.
Attorneys took advantage of the situation of having unlimited time, and they would argue for 5 hours at a stretch, sometimes more than a week.
Even as written briefs were required and time limitations put in place, the event was Capitol Hill's own matinee.
It was kind of the greatest show in town in the second half of the 19th century. You had society women who would wear their fancy bonnets with plumes, and the advocates strayed very far from the merits of the case. You know, they were stemwinders with allusions to the Bible and Roman law and Shakespeare.
Justice Stephen Breyer told a University of Arizona law journal that one downside of the new format is that there rarely is a light moment, though he unintentionally supplied one last year while hearing a case about robocalls.
Good, thank you. I'm sorry. The telephone started to ring. And it cut me off the call, and I don't think it was a robocall.
And early on, Justice Sonia Sotomayor struggled with the unmute function.
Justice Sotomayor?
I am sorry, Chief. Did it again.
And last May, a sound never before heard in a Supreme Court argument.
And what the FCC has said is that when the subject matter of the call ranges to the topics,
the court recommends that attorneys call in on a landline, even suggesting a specific model of speakerphone. The rest is up to the lawyers. Supreme Court veteran Neil Katyal.
I don't have to, you know, wear a suit. I do. I wear the exact same suit to every single Supreme Court argument, from my first one to now my 44th one.
While the lawyers perform in private, Art Lean, longtime sketch artist for NBC News and SCOTUS blog, does his best to capture them. Since October, he's been producing sketches from photos they provide.
I'm used to a lawyer at the lectern in a suit. It's the same old thing, and I've been doing it since the late 70s. To have a lawyer send me a photograph of themselves in a hoodie, you know, arguing is kind of refreshing.
Do you have any favorites of sketches you've done since October?
There was a law professor, and he's the only one that was actually holding an old-fashioned landline phone, you know, up to his ear. This attorney set up photographs of the nine justices in a moot court. And, you know, the masks.
This isn't the first time the court has had to adjust for a public health crisis. Oral arguments were postponed in 1793 and 1798 because of yellow fever outbreaks, and again in 1918 due to the Spanish flu epidemic. In 2001, anthrax discovered in the court's mailroom made a D.C. federal courthouse the Supreme Court's temporary home. And with the telephone arguments available to the public live, Katyal says it's time for the justices to shatter another tradition.
It's just an illustration of the fact that I think the Supreme Court has to move to live televised arguments. At the end of the day, the Supreme Court is deciding some of the most momentous issues facing America and the world. And it's our court. It's the people's court. And I think it's inspiring for all Americans to see it operate in action, particularly at a time when there's so much divisiveness in the country.
There's no indication the court will drop its longstanding opposition to television coverage. For now, with all the justices fully vaccinated, most have even begun meeting in person again. But they won't return to the courtroom for oral arguments until at least this fall. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm John Yang.